Well, good afternoon, fellow constitutionalists, and welcome to the Free For All Friday edition of the Dan Clements Show, a Christian political talk show. I'm your host, Dan Clements, your constitutional warrior fighting for your right just to be an American. It is February 9th in the year of our Lord 2018. Remember, we're a hyphen-free, PC-free zone. God is still in control, and he does love you. And I'm broadcasting live from the Hemlock Studios here in the beautiful central Susquehanna Valley in the great Keystone State. And first, let me get this off my chest here. I do apologize for this week of not producing any videos this week. My wife's aunt, her favorite aunt, and the aunt that looked to my wife as her only daughter that she never had. My wife's aunt, Sheila, passed away last Saturday morning, and she was 83 years old, and she said that she was ready to go. She was surrounded by family, and so we were dealing with some pretty raw emotions last week, especially my wife Lori. So I was doing a lot more than what I should have with my fibromyalgia, but I sort of sacrificed myself for my wife so I could be there for her, and I just had no energy at all during the day. To do a program, not even to come on and tell you why I wasn't able to do a program. And so I do apologize for that. I should have found some way to do that, but I don't have any people with me, so I can't blame it on anybody else but myself. And again, I do apologize. And the reason why we're broadcasting so late today is, again, because yesterday was the funeral. My wife was dealing, again, with some emotions, and I wanted to be there for her. So that's why, I'm a little bit late getting it done today because, frankly, I was tired. I got up and did my my water therapy, and I felt like a zombie going there because I was just wore out. But I wanted to get that in because I was hurting most of the week because not doing therapy. So I wanted to get that in, and I got home, and I just could not keep my eyelids open to come up here and set the show up for the noontime hour. And so I was resting and trying to get my energy up, but I'm here. We're going to get through this show. Hopefully, it's not going to be a super long show, but it'll be an informative show, okay? And one of the things we're going to talk about today is evolution, and I'm not going to go deep into it, and again, I'm not a scientist. I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night, but I'm not a scientist, but I can read. I have logical reasoning abilities. I can put two and two together and get four. I can define terms like theory, even though the scientific world wants you to believe it's something else than what the word theory actually means. I don't believe scientists are allowed to or should be able to redefine terms to their liking. And so I got in a discussion with a gentleman on Facebook who is a photographer on the West Coast. He said he was part of the newspaper. He's retired. I can't remember the exact newspaper it was, and he was trying to take me to task on, evolution, and I kept asking him, I said, I missed the announcement where they actually proved, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that any part of evolution is actually factual. I said, it's still just a theory, and that's where we got into discussion about words and everything, and I was like, dude, one of the comments he made, scientists do not make the language, like thee, there, thy, you or our, whatever, your or you are, or the abbreviation of that. They don't do this language thing. So they just use words that are in the language already. And he says, the scientists define theory different than other folks. And I was like, but you just said they don't do their own language, and yet you want to allow them to redefine terms. And basically what he was saying, and this is how the scientific, I'm going to put that in quotations, world behaves when it comes to evolution, that theory actually means proven, and it doesn't. There's no such thing as the theory of gravity, okay? When you fall off a 40-foot ladder, folks, you're not testing the theory of gravity. You are proving that gravity is a law, a scientific law, just like laws of thermodynamics. They are laws. They're not theory. They're not still being researched. They are absolute scientific law. And too many scientists out there are treating evolution as a law. And his biggest argument was, well, DNA proves evolution. So we're going to get into that part of it. We're going to talk a little bit about this. And again, he was asking me my sources, and I gave him an article that I had found that went very well with other articles that I've read from trusted sources like Apologetics Press and the Institute for Creation Research. But I told him, I said, you know what? It doesn't matter what I say to this. I told him this. It doesn't matter what I say to you. Your quick response tells me, unless you are a super-duper speed reader, you did not read the article. And he was dismissing the article I was sharing because of the website it was on. And I said, well, did you read the article and disprove the article, or you just disapprove of the site that it's on? And I never got an answer back from him. And this is how, and this is so frustrating, folks. This is how the left, this is how regressives operate. They'll dismiss things out of hand because either they don't like the source or they want to try to discredit the source instead of going to the article first and reading it and putting it up, you know, examining the article, what the gentleman was saying in the article. Now, we're not going to be able to go through the whole article. It's like 14 pages long. But this, I'm going to put the link up. We're going to talk about it a little bit in the show here. But when it comes to evolution, nothing's been proven. Everything is still either a hypothesis or it's moved from a hypothesis into the theory stage of things. But a theory is still not proven. No matter how much you want the theory to be proven, if you cannot prove it, it's still just a theory. But again, in the world of evolutionists, that's okay. They feel that they have enough evidence out there that it's the argument's over. The debate's over. When in fact, their debate is based on a false premise. Their debate is based on things that aren't, facts that are not in evidence, in other words. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about, I came across this on BizPack Review, and it's funny. I got two clips here from The View with Antonio Sabato Jr. is running for office out in California. And it's, he takes The View, Joy Behar, and what's the other name? Sonny Hostin to task on some comments. He talks about how he believed that President Obama, whether he was practicing or not, was a Muslim. And Joy and Sonny said, well, there's no evidence of that. Absolutely no evidence of that. And I'm like, excuse me? What do you mean there's no evidence of that? Of course there's evidence that actually proves that, folks. But we'll get into that. I thought that was funny. But the main reason why I wanted to watch his video was he was taking Joy Behar and Sonny Hostin to task on immigration. And this clip that I'll show you later on the show here proves that Joy Behar, or neither she nor Sonny Hostin, knows anything about immigration. They're just spewing the politically correct line about immigration. And the funny thing about it was, Antonio is not a native-born American. He is an American citizen, but his parents legally immigrated over here. Matter of fact, Tony grew up in Italy until he was 12 years old, didn't speak any English until he came over here, but their family did it legally. And he doesn't have a problem with legal immigration. I don't have a problem with legal immigration. But Joy and Sonny just made fools of themselves. So we're going to have that clip there. And then we're also going to talk a little bit, along with all this Muslim thing with Barack Obama, I want to bring up the point about the Nation of Islam with Louis Farrakhan and what he preaches, which is black liberation theology, which is exactly what the United Church of Christ, where Jeremiah Wright preached, and Barack Obama was in attendance. And I'm telling you, folks, they were preaching the black liberation theology at that church where Jeremiah Wright was a preacher. And black liberation theology is the closest you're going to get to Islam from a Christian perspective. It is actually taking the name of Christ and disguising Islam tenets or Muslim tenets. behind the word Christ, behind the name of Christ. And this is, to me, this is pretty strange. It's pretty funny to me that Joy Behar and Sonny didn't know this, didn't know anything about black liberation theology. And I do have a blog posting. It's called Thoughts of a Conservative Christian. Now, this posting was written back in 2008, and he goes through, he says this is proof of Obama was a Muslim. Now, I don't go as far as proof, but it's food for thought. It definitely is food for thought if you read down through this, and especially when these folks claim that he was a Christian. 20 years in this United Church of Christ out there in Illinois, and the Reverend Jeremiah Wright and what he preached doesn't have anything to do with Christianity. Sorry. So they're still trying to protect the legacy of Barack Obama and doing a bad job. And I thought that was just funny. Now, I was going to try to get into some other stuff today about the Uranium One and some of the stuff, the new stuff that's coming up with the because of the Mueller investigation. And I do believe there was some Russian collusion going on. But it definitely wasn't with the Trump campaign. It definitely wasn't. This Russian collusion was coming from the other side. And again, this is a tactic of the left. It's Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, that if you're doing something wrong, blame it on the opposition. And I'm like, blame it on the opposition? Are you crazy? Are you crazy? Blame that on the opposition, right? And it's like, I never understood that, you know? And I don't understand why people can't see through that facade, you know, through that mask that they're putting on, that they're doing it. The collusion's on the Republican side. The collusion's on Trump's campaign. It's not on us. But the evidence is really starting to stack up, pointing to the collusion being with the Democrats and what they were doing to Bernie Sanders. It's incredible. So I'm going to be doing a separate video on that. I just can't do it in this show. It'll make the show way too long. So we're going to do a separate video just on that alone, plus some other things that I thought might be interesting for you folks to actually see and hear about. So let's get into the show today. The show sponsor today is Castos. Now, I have my website, the show notes page, thedanclementshow.com, hosted by Bluehost. It's a WordPress ready site, and one of the plugins I use is Castos. Now, Castos, they actually archive all my podcasts, not my videos, just the audio. And like I do every episode that I do here, I do a YouTube video and I'm recording the audio with Audacity on my streaming computer, and then that's what goes up on the podcast. And that's what goes on my podcast page. And Castos are wonderful. I cannot say enough about these folks. They're a small company. They're starting out, but they're doing everything right. They got the customer service, I think, down before they did anything else. And I was just having an issue, and I knew it wasn't their issue, but I was asking to see if they could actually figure it out for me about my RSS feed. I emailed them. They were more than happy to help me with that. They went on to my, in the back door of my website. They checked some things out. He figured out what was going wrong, because, like I said, that's another learning curve for me that I really don't want to go through. And they're more than happy to figure that out so that I could start putting my podcast out on Stitcher and on iTunes. Stitcher definitely has it. I'm still waiting on iTunes to make sure that they have it going, but Stitcher definitely has it going. So if you look up the Dan Clement Show on Stitcher, you'll get my latest episodes on there. So again, I can't say enough about Castos podcast hosting. They got a really easy, good-looking media player. It's one-click import. It one-click, and it installed and did everything it needed to do for my website. It's got playback-level analytics. They got fantastic analytics over there. Plus, they actually transfer into my analytics on my Bluehost, which is fantastic, which is their actual analytics that I can import. And again, it's a direct WordPress integration. I can't say enough about these folks, and I know I'm prattling on about it, but these the folks over at Castos. So if you go to thedancolumbusshow.com and go down below the menu bar, you'll see them, a big old advertisement for them. They're going to be my featured advertiser all month. But Castos, web host, or podcast hosting. And another thing, real quick, I had over 800 podcast episodes over Blog Talk Radio, and their engineers imported every one of them over to Castos. And I have a unlimited amount of storage. Now, podcasts are very small files that you can download. And so if you like what you're hearing on the show on YouTube, but you want to carry it with you and you don't want to watch videos all day, but you want to listen to it on your, like I got a SanDisk Clip, MP3 player, I re-listen to my shows to try to make myself, you know, I pick myself apart. So again, today's advertiser is a affiliate marketer of mine, Castos, and I use them. And they're just fantastic. And folks, I'm going to try my best. This is my promise to you. I'm going to try my best to never try to sell you a product that I haven't used first myself and I haven't been using. And Castos, I've been using for a while now, a few months, and they're fantastic. They're, like I said, again, I can't say enough about them. And again, I know I'm prattling on, but they're that good. They really are that good. And I'll let you know, I actually did, Castos has a podcast called Podcast Hackers that they're putting out. I'll let you know, they're going to send me a link when the show is going to be on. Matter of fact, I didn't get a chance to check out their, I didn't get a chance to check out and see if they had sent me something. No, I haven't seen another email yet, but when I get the link up, I'll let you know about the interview they did with me on Castos. So, again, let me get back over here where I wanted to be. Today's Daily Bible reading comes from the book of Isaiah, chapter 40, verses 29 through 31. He gives power to the weak, and to those who have no might, he increases strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up on wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. If we just trust and rely on the Lord, he will give us the strength we need to get through difficult times in our lives. Quote mail comes from Philip Yancey. The people of God are not merely to mark time, waiting for God to step in and set right all that is wrong. Rather, they are to model the new heaven and the new earth, and by doing so, awaken longings for what God will someday bring to pass. Amen. Now, today's short Bible lesson comes from Wes McAdams at RadicallyChristian.com. He posted this up on the 6th of February of this year. What Wes is doing now is he's actually taking and reading through a whole book of the Bible each day. And he goes through and he reads it with certain emphasis on things that he actually notices in these books. Sometimes we just read and we don't notice things. So today's short Bible lesson is a few things I noticed when I read Deuteronomy today. And so Wes is he's a very good author and seems to me a very good preacher, well-studied and well-references when he puts out his articles here. So I encourage you to go to thedancolumbusshow.com. And the show notes page for today is 968. Go over there and click on that, and you'll see the link for that at under the short Bible lesson tab there. Now, get a little drink here. Evolution. A fact of science. Is it or, with a question mark, is it or is it not? A fact of science. And this is something that, again, I'm not a scientist, but I have a mind. I'm able to logically reason things through. I'm able to do research. I'm able to distinguish between numbers. You know, 1 + 1 = 2. 1 + 2 = 3. You know, stuff like that. I know, you know, I can reason these things out. When I look at politics, I can reason certain things out, especially about our constitutional republic. You know, we have a constitution. I can read the constitution. I can understand the Constitution. I don't have to be a lawyer to do so. Anybody can understand the Constitution if you keep it in context. I know, and when I see something, like I was looking on the, I have it down at my laptop, and there's one of those things I didn't get to today as far as putting it in with the show, but there was a bunch of new laws introduced in the House of Representatives today, and I was looking down through there, and surprise, surprise, and I'm going to look through them again and study them a little bit more, but just by the titles of the laws that they're introducing in the House of Representatives, none of them are constitutional. Not a single one of them are constitutional because they're not found within the enumerated powers of Congress or the federal government, which would be Congress. None of them fall within the enumerated powers in Section 1, Clause 2, you know, about the enumerated powers under the Congress. And so we're going to talk about that, and I'm still dealing with some stuff on trying to put some podcast or some not podcasts but some videos out about the Convention of States. There's a lot of lies being told about it from the John Birch Society, from Common Cause, from Let America Vote, Indivisible Guide, a lot of the left-leaning news sources are putting out lies about the Convention of States project. They keep calling it CONCON or Constitutional Convention. Even my own party, the Constitution Party, is making the mistake of calling it a CONCON and trying to explain why they think it will evolve into a constitutional convention and won't be limited to amendments. And I just totally disagree with them, because the representatives, basically what it is they think the representatives from each state that they send, once they're at the convention, they can do what they want. And history shows that not to be the case. Matter of fact, I still have it up here as a short video clip from the HBO miniseries John Adams, and I went back and researched the vote for the Declaration of Independence. And if that were true, that the delegates from the states that were sent by the states could do whatever they wanted, then the delegate from New York, who had no instructions either way from the state of New York, had to abstain from the vote, because he wasn't there just representing himself or his interest. And that's, to me, that's where their arguments fall down. So we're going to get into that some more about that. I know I just went a little bit afield here, but I'm passionate about the Constitution. I'm passionate about getting the truth out about things. And evolution is one of those things that I'm passionate about getting the truth out about. And the truth of the matter is, as I see it, that evolution is not science. I mean, it is. They're trying to use science to prove evolution, but they're not proving it. It's not fact. It's not a fact of science. Now, I have this article here I want to show you real quick from... this is by Brett Thompson. He's a PhD, and this was published in 2001 over Apologetics Press. And like I said, this one here is like 24 pages long. This one here is about 24 pages long that I'm going to show you. And it amazes me. It just amazes me as I read through this whole thing, how anybody can believe that evolution is a fact of science, when there are so many questions that have not been answered. And I just want to read for just a couple paragraphs out of this. Is evolution a fact of science? Now, this is about halfway down through the article, the 24 pages. When we talk about the origin of the universe and those things in it, we cannot speak as eyewitnesses or firsthand observers. None of us was present when the origin of the universe occurred. Therefore, any scientific discussion must be based on assumptions, hypotheses, and theories put in place after the fact. An assumption is something taken for granted and represents a legitimate starting point for an investigation. A hypothesis is an educated guess and tentative assumption. A theory is a plausible or scientifically acceptable general principle or body of principles to explain phenomena. Generally, it is alleged by the most spirited evolutionists that evolution has been proven and therefore must be spoken of not as theory but fact. As far back as 1944, evolutionist W.W. Howells wrote in Mankind So Far that there is also the mystery of how and why evolution takes place at all. Evolution is a fact like digestion. Now, May 2nd, 1966, Nobel laureate Hermann J. Mueller circulated a manifesto that affirmed it has for many years been well established scientifically that all known forms of life, including man, have come into being by a lengthy process of evolution. There are no hypotheses alternative to the principle of evolution with its tree of life that any competent biologist of today takes seriously. Moreover, the principle is so important for an understanding of the world we live in and of ourselves that the public in general, including students taking biology in high school, should be made aware of it and of the fact that it is firmly established even as the rotundity of the earth is firmly established, 1966. And then affixing their names to Dr. Mueller's manifesto to signify their agreement were 177 of the world's most eminent evolutionary scientists. Okay, that sound familiar to you? Does that sound familiar to something that's happening today about climate change? You know, man or human-caused climate change. The consensus is in. It's fact. Mankind, humans, are causing climate change. Those are the facts. When so many of the studies they base their facts on, hit my microphone there, so many studies they base their facts on have found to be misleading or outright lies and manipulations of the facts that you can't trust them. It's just like, you know, go back into politics. There's with the Republican memo coming out, everything, all the investigations we've known so far, Judicial Watch and all their Freedom of Information Act, everything coming together, that GPS or Fusion GPS dossier that the Christopher Steven put together was faked and phony and forgive the pun, trumped up, paid for by the DNC and Hillary as opposition research on President Trump. And there's nothing about that dossier that should be trusted at all. There's nothing about the warrants for wiretapping the Trump campaign that they slid by the FISA judges. Matter of fact, Mr. Nunes is getting with Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justice Roberts, because he's the one that points the judges to the FISA courts. And he's getting together with them and going to be sitting down talking with the judges. And I think it's right that Chief Justice Roberts be there because he's the one that appoints them. And if these judges were snookered by the prosecutors or the FBI or whoever was bringing us and asking for the warrants there, then honestly, I think heads are going to roll because there's law at stake here. But when it comes to 177 of the world's most eminent evolutionary scientists signed on, so it has to be right. There's a consensus of that. Last time I checked, consensus doesn't prove anything at all. Now, I have this other one, and this is the reason why I didn't give this gentleman these sites, because I knew what he was going to say. These regressives out there, these liberal Democrats that are littering our country, littering our journalistic institutions, are nothing if they're not predictable. If you can't attack the material, attack the source. And so that's why I didn't tell him about Apologetics Press. I didn't tell him about the Institute for Creation Research. You cannot scientifically look at and see if there was creation because evolution's been proven as a fact. But yet every day, it seems like, from the Institute of Creation Research, every day they bring out new stuff. It's like, you got to be kidding me. And they dismiss it because they don't look at these scientists that are over there, these biologists, these archaeologists over at the Institute for Creation Research or the guys that work over for Apologetics Press, they don't look at them as real scientists. Oh, they're not real scientists. Well, who are you to judge that? Who are you to judge if they're real scientists or not? And again, they look at the Institute for Creation Research. They see the term creation in there. Oh, you guys are trying to prove intelligent design. You're trying to prove that there was a God that created the heavens and earth. Yeah, okay. That's a hypothesis. That's an assumption. Why can't we test that? Why can't we scientifically test that? You say you can scientifically test evolution and find out if evolution is fact or not. Why can't we do the same thing with creation? And I believe the reason why most of the mainstream scientists who believe in evolution, the reason why they don't want the research into creation, if creation took place by a God, by a deity, is if facts actually fall in line with the creation theory. Let's just keep apples to apples. So if it falls in line with the creation theory, and the facts are actually lining up behind that, then they're going to have to change the way they're thinking. And matter of fact, they might even lose some grant money from universities and from governments that are putting money into this research supporting evolution. And it'll turn the world upside down. That's why they don't want the research done. That's why if I'd have given this guy these websites, all he would have said was, Institute for Creation Research, they're discredited from the start. You can't believe anything they say. Creation, oh, that's a bunch of hokum. And yet every day something comes along like soft tissue in dinosaur fossils that they found. According to most biologists, maybe 10,000 years at the most would that soft tissue survive inside a fossil. But there's no way under God's green earth, now they wouldn't say that, but there's no way under God's green earth that it would survive for millions of years like they want to say that evolution took. And again, if when I was in school, evolution was millions of years that it took. And later on, they went to tens of millions of years. And now hundreds of millions of years. And now they're saying that the earth and everything, the sun, is 4, 5, 6 billion years old. And so that's how long it took for evolution to take place. And one of the basic, and I just want to put this out here, that I've asked and have not had a good answer to. If evolution took place and the earth started out as a primordial, inhospitable environment to oxygen breathers, carbon-based life forms like we are, how did anything evolve through natural selection? A plant that would have had to be able to survive in that type of atmosphere that would have been the earth, as evolutionists would have said, would have never made it. It would have never been here long enough to evolve. You see what I'm saying? Now I've actually heard people say, well, it actually adapted when it became a plant. It was actually its DNA, and there is plant DNA, was of such it would survive in that. Well, if it was as such it would survive in that, then wouldn't we still have a primordial earth with this vegetation that doesn't breathe in carbon dioxide that and doesn't give out oxygen? And Charles Darwin himself talked about the eye. That there's no way that natural selection can explain the eye. And this gentleman was telling me, well, DNA proves evolution. And it doesn't. DNA actually proves or disproves evolution, because there is no, you cannot take the materials to create a baby from, let's say, a man and impregnate another species, a female species. It's not going to work. It just can't happen. They're not compatible to cross species. Even the closest ones, I said the chimpanzees can't. Just can't. And so if they can't crossbreed like that, how in the world did we evolve? It doesn't make sense. There's too many holes in their theory that they want to say is fact, and that since I'm not a scientist, I can't understand those things. Well, if I can't understand those things, then it behooves you to put them out in such a way that I can understand them if you think I'm factually wrong. that I'm questioning these things I shouldn't be questioning. It's, again, put it in such terms, like simple English for me, so I can understand it. But that's not the problem. Understanding isn't the problem, folks. It's not I can't understand what they're talking about. It's that when I start asking questions, well, this doesn't make sense or that doesn't make sense, then you go back, well, that's science, you know, that's pretty scientific, you know, it's kind of hard to explain. No, sorry, that's an excuse on your part. If you are too smart to explain it to somebody like me, then why are you explaining it to anybody at all? If only your scientific buddies can understand it, what good does that do the world? What good does that do the world? Now, this, like I said, this article here is by Brian Thomas. He's got a master's in science. He posted this on January 31st, 2018. I thought it was kind of neat that, you know, this he published this, and then what actually started the Facebook comment was this young lady shared a video of Mike Pence saying that evolution is still just a theory. She said Mike Pence is a theory. Then I put in there, you know, I just keep going back. Did I miss the announcement that they've actually replicated something in evolution? You know, especially life from nothing, you know, organic life from the inorganic. Did I miss that announcement? And this one, this gentleman jumped in here, and I asked him the same question. He never answered. Did I miss the announcement? I don't think I did. I don't think I did at all. So he's asking the question, is evolution a lie? In the view of modern culture, how could anyone be so foolish as to doubt evolution? After all, its defenders point to all kinds of examples to back their beliefs. A thoughtful look, though, at two categories of examples, past and present, reveals how far the grand story of evolution strays from reality. First, it helps to know what the word evolution means to the person using it. If it merely means that certain animal traits change between generations, that's hard to refute. But most people use the term to recap a drawn-out cosmic story of how hydrogen formed stars, stars formed planets, living cells formed on planets, and single-celled life developed into every living thing on Earth. Now, that's tough to defend, but many still try. Past evolution. Suppose examples of past evolution use circular logic. Adherents assume evolution before they conclude evolution. Take stars, for instance. How do astronomers assign star formation rates to galaxies? They can't use observable science since nobody has ever seen a star form. So they argue like this. We see stars all across the sky. We see stars die in explosions. Billions of years old galaxies should have run out of those stars that burned through their fuel in only millions of years before exploding. Therefore, someplace out there must be making or keep making stars. Now, and you'll see some highlighted things. Suppose example of past evolution uses circular logic. Adherents assume before they conclude. And this is what they're doing. They're taking, and this is a logical fallacy. And this is just like what they do with President Trump. I got to bring us back to the political. They assume Trump is evil and a bad man, doesn't know what he's doing as president, so he must be defeated. They got to get him out there. And they assume that with no facts and evidence. That's their end point. First they find an end point, and they cherry pick all these facts to prove that Trump isn't who he says he is and is not a capable president or anything like that. And that's very, very dangerous to do. But that's what evolutionists do. They come at it, well, evolution did happen, and now here we're going to find the facts to back that up. And a lot of things they actually cherry pick, and a lot of things they assume could happen, but can't prove that they did happen, if you understand what I'm saying. Space dust gas doesn't contract into stars. It expands. Secular star formation rates hinge on the assumption of billions of years of stellar evolution, not observable science. Until experts give examples of new stars actually emerging, then our universe better fits. He made the stars also in Genesis 1:16. Then the circular logic about star formation. Again, the galaxies And the universe is always expanding, not contracting in the stars. All right, and that's just one question. Next, media, museums, and most biology textbooks use ape men as examples of past evolution, but they fail to expose the fact that evolutionary experts disagree over whether each ape man candidate belongs in human ancestry or in ape ancestry. Take the African fossil nicknamed Lucy, for example. Some experts say it became human, but others say it just became extinct. With its chimp-like size, skull, fingers, ribs, and legs, Lucy was clearly an ape. Similarly, many once taught that Java Man, one of several fossils evolutionists call Homo erectus, somehow became us. However, other evolutionists identify the Homo erectus fossil collection as just an extinct variety of humans like the Neanderthals. How do evolutionists get their ape men amid so much dispute? They either upgrade an ape or downgrade a human. But if Lucy was clearly an ape and Java Man a human, then where's the evolution? Extinctions of created kinds or their varieties show no evolution. They simply reflect the Genesis 3 curse of the earth. Present evolution? What about the supposed modern examples of evolution in action? Each reduces to variations within a stable kind. Over 150 years ago, Charles Darwin described differences between pigeons' feathers to illustrate evolution. What do we have today? Still just pigeons. The passenger pigeon variety has gone extinct since then. So if anything, pigeons have devolved, not evolved. Yes, certain creatures' features can change between generations, like stripes on a zebra or zorse. None of these variations support big picture evolution. Meanwhile, basic creature body plans like the horse kind remain true to their original design. These stable kinds confirm Genesis 1:24. God said, "Let the earth bring forth every living creature according to its kind." God equipped each kind to express variations. Animals tweak their design traits to fit into changing settings. Different-looking people display God's love of creativity. No new stars from gas clouds, no new humans from apes, no new animals from pigeons or horses. Nobody has shown that particles-to-people evolution happened in the past or happens today. But if those willing to see it, evidence for Genesis creation abounds. And that's where the scientist parts ways. They don't want to believe in the creation story. They don't want to believe that God brought forth all these things. Because if they do, then evolution is done. And all the funding that they... And I have to bring it back to the money, folks. All the funding they get for researching evolution to appease the folks that give them their grants or their funding, they keep getting it. But if they claim that creation is the genesis of life on Earth, then that funding dries up. And there's many, many examples. Mr. Stein's video, No Intelligence Allowed. You know, there's a whole movie about that. And he brings forth a lot of examples about that people have disputes about. And again, just like Apologetics Press, ICR, Institute for Creation Research, they insist that they have references to whatever they're talking about in the article. Now, Brian Thomas is a science writer at the Institute for Creation Research and earned his MS in biotechnology from Stephen F. Austin State University. Now, we're not going to go over this other article here. I bring these out to give you some food for thought. This one is from the humansarefree.com. This is the website that this is the one article I pointed to that was outside of the scope of the two religious organizations that I was pointing out to, Apologetics Press and Institute for Creation Research. 9 scientific facts prove the theory of evolution is false. Now, the scientific facts, some of these I would have to question whether they're facts, but put them over into logical reasoning. Now, I'm not going to read through the whole thing. I'm just going to jump down to the first one here as soon as I get to it. He goes through he lays out a lot of arguments with about Lucy and some other things and about opinions that are actually being brought forth. Books there like Evolution of Theory and Crisis by Michael Denton. And it's really good article. I read the whole thing. And again, I want to get down here to, hopefully I didn't miss them. I did miss them. I thought they were highlighted. That was fact number 3. Sorry about this, folks. One of these days I'm going to figure out how to get all these highlighted while I'm, doing all this. Let's see here. I do apologize. I don't want dead air here on my podcast, but I do apologize for this. I should have just stuck down at number 3. Scientific fact number 1. Birds prove natural selection is naturally wrong. The body and soul of Darwin's theory of evolution was the idea that evolution was made possible through natural selection. This concept is based on the suggestion that these members of a species that are a little stronger, a little larger, or run a little faster will live longer to procreate offspring with their superior adaptations. Darwin's theory suggests that millions of generations later, the changes result in new species. These adaptations are called links or intermediates between the old species and the new. The idea of natural selection sounds great when considering deer. The deer can sense danger. The deer that can sense danger the quickest and run the fastest are able to escape the predator on a more consistent basis. However, other examples on the evolutionary tree have many flaws. One of the best examples of evolutionary nonsense is the thought that a wingless bird began to evolve a wing. Why this would occur is not answered by evolutionists. The wing stub did not make the bird more adaptable to his environment. The first wing stubs would be much too small for the bird to fly. Why would a bird evolve wing stubs that are useless? This is backwards from the evolutionary theory of natural selection, which states that birds adapt and change in order to survive better in their environment. The bird with a half-sized wing is placed at a disadvantage in its environment. Why would the bird continue for millions of generations to improve a wing stub that is useless? The theory of evolution is based on natural selection, and the most acceptable members of a species, not the weakest, or adaptable, excuse me, most adaptable member of the species, not the weakest. A bird with a useless wing is at a severe disadvantage. This is the opposite of natural selection. And it is. And he goes down through this whole article making reasoned arguments like this. He had that wing stub, so why does he need the wing, right? And again, please go to thedancolumbusshow.com and click on the show notes page, and you'll see what I'm talking about. And you go and read these for yourself. Like I said, the one from Apologetics Press and the one from Humans Are Free are rather lengthy, but they are well thought out, well reasoned, and a lot of them are poking holes in evolution. And especially Apologetics Press, they not only poke holes, they give you the creationist answer to these things. And like I said, that we spend weeks on going over evidence in the Bible to support why the Word of God, the Bible, is true and accurate from a scientific standpoint, from a history standpoint, from a medical standpoint, from a geological standpoint. Like in the book of Isaiah, where Isaiah was told that the earth is a sphere. There's no way that they could have known the earth was a sphere unless somebody who knew told them that it was a sphere. That's one example. To me, that's just one example of many that are going on here. Now, let's jump down to this Antonio Sabato Jr. I like him. He's an actor. He was a Calvin Klein underwear model. And he used to be on General Hospital, and I have to admit, I remember watching General Hospital back in the day when he was on there. And, you know, I had a broken leg and there wasn't anything else on TV. And I don't know if he's on right then, but I remember over the years seeing some episodes with him in it on General Hospital. But anyway, Antonio is running for office out in California. And he's being questioned on The View. And I thought this was pretty funny. And I just want to I want to go over to the article itself before I go over to the video clips. And this article here just deals with his campaign, but something came up before in the article. Something came up about Antonio's belief that Barack Obama is a Muslim. And they just, Joy Behar and Sonny Hostin, just, you know, no, there's no evidence to that. There is no. So we're going to deal with that second because there is. Again, food for thought. Food for thought. But I'm going to actually introduce some evidence myself that he is, anybody that believes and preaches the Black Liberation Theology is Muslim. Sorry. That's my thoughts on it. But anyway, let's get over this article here real quick. And then we'll get into the videos. And we'll be talking about the... we're going to be talking about Antonio Sabato Jr. gets the best of Joy Behar debating immigration and she can't stand it. And it's not hard, folks. It's not hard to get the best of Joy Behar. She is woefully ill-informed. She lives and dies by an ideology that lives in a narrative echo chamber. And anything that's introduced into that that's not part of the echo chamber, she puts down, she ridicules, and she does it in such a way that it's so easy to disprove her beliefs it isn't funny. It really is. And this is an article by Scott Moorfield over at BizPack Review. Conservative model, actor, and California congressional candidate Antonio Sabato Jr. made an appearance on Wednesday's edition of The View. Now, this was back on the 9th of this month, okay? Or actually, it was today. Today's show. Or actually, Wednesday, excuse me. This is the 9th. That would have been the 7th. The 7th of February, excuse me. Sabato is an outspoken Trump supporter who happens to be a child of Czech and Italian immigrants who legally brought him to the United States when he was 12 years old. But that didn't stop Joy Behar and the other hens on The View from trying to use that against his positions on border security. Let me see here. Let's just go down past that. There's some tweets on here. Let me ask you another thing. This is difficult to me to understand, said co-host Sonny Hostin. We've talked about your family having to hide their identity during the Holocaust in Czechoslovakia, and we've talked about the fact that you came here at 12 years old from Italy, speaking no English, and this country embraced you. You call yourself an immigrant, but you're in favor of the wall being built, being paid for by American people, and keeping other immigrants out of the country, much like yourself. And this is where we're going to pick up on the clip, and this is what's so funny. It's so easy. It's so easy for Tony to dispute them. So let me get this set up, and we'll put this up real quick here.
Let me ask you another thing that is difficult for me to understand. We've talked about your family having to hide their identity during the Holocaust in Czechoslovakia, and we've talked about the fact that you came here at 12 years old from Italy, speaking no English, and this country embraced you. Mm-hmm. You call yourself an immigrant, mm-hmm. but you're in favor of the wall being built, being paid for by the American people, and keeping other immigrants out of the country, much like yourself.
Well, the way I see it, I want the American people to be taken care of first. I don't want the American people to take care of everybody else's problems.
But if they felt that way when your family was coming over here,
I came here legally, and we had to wait in line, and we had to struggle and save a lot of money. And so there's people like that waiting in line.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they deserve their chance.
Yeah.
I think we need to legalize. I mean, this reform has to be reformed. Immigration has to be reformed.
So you are in support of immigration reform?
I think, listen, kids that were born in this country, as going back to the DACA situation, mm-hmm. they need to be here. We're going to take care of them. Nobody's going to send them anywhere.
You say that, but it hasn't been settled.
But that's what I would push for.
Okay.
But at the same time, we need to protect our borders. So I think we need to build some sort of protection.
But Antonio, logically, people who are coming in, even legally or illegally, are flying in. They're not jumping over a wall.
Well, they're flying in.
It's a waste of money, isn't it? That's how I see it.
We are resting We are arresting at the border 1,000 people every single day. And there's probably a lot more coming in. So we can't allow that to happen. And they're bringing a lot of drugs or whatever. So we need to protect the American people. That's all I'm saying. And we need to build some sort of protection.
And you think this wall is going to do it?
Well, I've done it for Israel. Mexico's got a wall. Why can't we?
Well, it's a very big, expensive wall we're talking about. And it may not be cost effective, but that's another
story. Well, we spend $100 billion on immigration every year. The wall will cost probably less than $20 billion. So we would save a lot of money.
Again, that's just an example of how Joy Behar is just not informed. Is just not informed when it comes to these things. And they tried to get him, and Antonio did a very good job. He really handed it to him, to Joy and Sonny on this. They conflate, and this is the problem we have when we try to debate with liberals about immigration or any open border folks, whether the libertarian or liberal, you know, the Democrats or the Libertarian Party. A lot of folks are very open borders because they don't believe in the state, and that's a whole other show, a whole other story here. But again, Joy Behar is right. There's a lot of people that fly into this country with visas, and they overstay their visas, and we don't kick them out. That's a problem. We have to fix that problem. It's not a hard problem to fix. It's not a hard problem to fix. When you come to this country, if you're on a visa, you got to tell somebody where you're going to be at. And I don't think that's a hard process. You know, we need to be able to get in touch with you. What's your cell phone number? You know, if something goes on here, and remind them that you're only allowed here for 3 months or 6 months, whatever the visa is. And once that's up, you got to go. You got to go back to your country of origin. And if you want to come and stay in this country, you got to go through the process right. That's an easy fix there to me. Enforcing that may be a little bit harder, but that's an easy fix for that, for the visa overstays. But when Antonio was talking about 1,000 people arrested at the border, what did he say, each month or each day? Let me get back over here. What do you say here? Let's see here. He came here. Well, they don't have it in the article here, but you heard him in there. You know, there's 1,000 arrests, and San Diego in California is that sector is one of the busiest in the nation, as far as detaining illegal immigrants crossing the border. And walls do work. Walls make very good neighbors. And again, Joy Behar, she got part of that right, but then the rest of it, it's not cost effective. Well, if we spend $100 billion a year on immigration every year, and the wall, to complete the wall from Texas to San Diego is only $20 billion, and you stop like the wall over Hungary, 99.9 or 99% effective. That means only 1% of the people trying to get in there is actually getting in there. That's pretty good. I'll take 99% effective. And if we can build a wall that comes even close to that, then we won't have to spend $100 billion a year on immigration. That money can be used elsewhere. To me, that's not a hard concept to understand. But anyway, earlier in the show, the crew over there at The View was asking him about his comments about Barack Obama being a Muslim. So let's hear that clip here real quick.
I have to press you because one thing that was surprising to me is that you, during an interview with ABC News, said that President Obama is a Muslim. Do you think that has anything to do with the black?
No, I never thought it was anything bad. I think there's millions of Muslims around the world. So I felt that it was never an insult. I mean, I'm Jewish. I became a Christian. And I felt that Obama, I mean, if he's not a Muslim, we should call him President Barry then. You know, I mean,
But he's not a Muslim.
But he's not a Muslim.
It so happens he's not.
Well, maybe it was my mistake then or whatever, but I think that I never meant, you know, I I like the president. I liked him as a person, his family. They're good people. So for me, it was never an insult like that.
So you understand he's not Muslim?
Okay. And he's not.
Do you? Do you get that? We've seen his birth certificate.
What I was saying was he changed his name to Obama because he followed the Islam religion when he was growing up. So I felt that, you know, once you're in that religion, you stay for the rest of your life.
There's no evidence.
There's no evidence. There's no evidence. And Joy Behar, oh, she's snarky. I couldn't stand to be around her. She is so snarky. You know, he said, well, you know, okay, you know, he's a Christian. You know, do you believe that? Do you really believe that? And again, it is so easy. I don't understand some of these folks, why they can't do the research to get these things. Now, again, this article says proof. This article says proof, okay? Proof Obama was Muslim. Now, first of all, Antonio was right. His name is Muslim. Barack Hussein Obama is a Muslim name. Santo? Let me go back down here. I'm not going to read this whole thing, but his father, his last name was, I had it on the tip of my tongue. But anyway, let's just go down through this real quick. One, and this is by this B. Simmons over at Thoughts of a Conservative Christian. Now, this was published back in 2008, 9/13/2008. Barack Hussein Obama, sorry about that, was born to generations of Muslims. Two, Barack Hussein Obama was raised for years in Muslim nations. Three, Barack Hussein Obama attended Muslim schools where he was registered as a Muslim. Four, Barack Hussein Obama wants you to believe that his opportunistic conversion to Christianity after being born to generations of Muslims who raised him for years in Muslim nations where he attended Muslim schools has completely eliminated his Islamic roots and changed his Muslim sympathies. Five, Barack Hussein Obama's church of 20 years gave many awards to the radical, anti-white, pro-Islamic Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan. Six, Barack Hussein Obama has been praised and endorsed by the Islamist terrorist group Hamas. Seven, Barack Hussein Obama has been praised and endorsed by Palestinian Rashad Khalidi, who also has held a fundraiser for Obama. Khalidi is a harsh critic of Israel, has made statements supportive of Palestine terror, and reportedly has worked on behalf of the Palestine Liberation Organization while it was involved in anti-Western terrorism and was labeled by the State Department as a terror group. Eight, Barack Hussein Obama has praised and endorsed in his autobiography the founder, the first president, Nation of Islam, President Malcolm X. Nine, his brother is Muslim. His sister is Muslim. His father, Barack Hussein Obama Sr., was born in the Sisari district in Kenya. His stepfather is Muslim. Lolo Sotero, that's his name. Lolo Sotero was a devout Muslim, and Obama went to the mosque on Fridays with him. Okay? Mother was a Muslim. Grandfather lived for a time in Zanzibar, where he converted from Christianity to Muslim. 15, Obama's teachers and principals from the 70s were Muslim. 16, the Obama campaign told the LA Times he wasn't a practicing Muslim. Why didn't the Obama campaign just say he wasn't a Muslim? 17, Lebanese Ralph Nader called Obama pro-Palestinian. In remarks made by Ralph Nader on Meet the Press, Nader added to the debate on Senator Obama's views on Israel and the Middle East and raised serious doubts on questions about the true leanings of Senator Obama on these important issues. So there are 17 things there. Now, again, are these all proof? No, they're not all proof. But they give you food for thought. Now, real quick here, Black Theology. Now, this is Wikipedia. Black theology or black liberation theology refers to a theological perspective which originated among African-American seminarians and scholars and in some black churches in the United States and later in other parts of the world. It contextualizes Christianity in an attempt to help those of African descent overcome oppression. It especially focuses on the injustices committed against African-Americans and black South Africans during American segregation and apartheid, respectively. Black theologically seeks to liberate non-white people from multiple forms of political, social, economic, and religious subjugation and views. Christian theology as a theology of liberation, a rational study of the being of God in the world in light of the existential situation of an oppressed community, relating the forces of liberation to the essences of the gospel, which is Jesus Christ, writes James Hal Cone, one of the original advocates of the perspective. Black theology mixes Christianity with questions of civil rights, particularly raised by the Black Power Movement and the Black Consciousness Movement. Further, black theology has led the way and contributed to the discussion and conclusion that all theology is contextual, even what is known by systematic theology. Now, it gets really heavy in there, but it's basically black liberation theology uses the guise of Christianity to preach hate against anybody that isn't of color. And this is the Nation of Islam, Malcolm X, Louis Farrakhan, they support this black liberation theology. They preach it. And again, so this is the closest thing you're going to see, I'm going to put this in quotes, a Christian church come to be an Islamic as you can get. And President Obama was a member of that for 20 years. He was a member of that for 20 years, folks. Now remember that. Don't forget that. He was living under that. Okay? He was definitely living under that. And again, it amazes me how many people forget about that. It amazes me how many people want to dismiss that, like Joey Behar and Sonny Hostin. So I think Antonio Sabato Jr. got it right. Just by his comments and the way he said things, he believes that Barack Obama was Muslim, or is Muslim, still is, if you want to know the truth. So, again, I just put that out. A lot of these things are food for thought. I wouldn't call it proof Obama was a Muslim, but there's a lot of circumstantial evidence pointing that way. It really is. And I do believe, growing up Muslim, a lot of that stuff rubbed off on him. And coming back and saying he converted to Christianity through the black liberation theology wasn't a conversion to Christianity at all, because the gospel doesn't liberate us from our races. The gospel liberates us from our sins. The gospel preaches a personal relationship between us and God through Jesus. Because Jesus is the mediator. Jesus is the saving force that saves us. Black liberation theology doesn't preach that. Sorry, it just doesn't. And again, it's going to be the closest thing you get to Islam in a Christian church. Now, the last thing I want to talk about, I almost predicted this, and I didn't say it, and I wish I would have, because it would have made me look good. So I'm not gonna say, you know, when I was talking about this, but this Me Too backlash. This Me Too backlash, and this is something that we definitely need to talk about. This Me Too backlash is you just knew this was coming. You just knew this was coming. Survey shows twice as many men now afraid to mentor women. There's a shock. Now, this is an article by Ben Shapiro over at Daily Wire. Now, this is his site, posted February 6th. On Tuesday, Arena Huffington, founder of the Huffington Post, apparently realized that the Me Too movement might have a serious problem on its hands. If Me Too insists that all women must be believed no matter what. Some men are going to act in risk-averse ways with female employees. That means, according to Huffington, a massive drop in the number of men who are willing to mentor women. The link directs leanin.org, a group dedicated to empowering women. According to the site, twice as many male managers now feel uncomfortable working alone with a woman. This is a step in the wrong direction. Almost half of male managers are uncomfortable participating in a common work activity with a woman, such as mentoring, working alone, or socializing together. Furthermore, 16% of male managers now say they're uncomfortable mentoring women, as opposed to 5% before Me Too. And senior-level men are five times as likely to hesitate to travel to work with a junior-level woman than a junior-level man. Well, duh. Why would men feel comfortable working alone with women or socializing together with when the possibility of a fraught encounter could ensue? And when men have been told that no matter what allegations are leveled against them, the burden of proof immediately falls on them. Huffington should know this better than most. Gizmodo accused Huffington of covering up sexual harassment at the Huffington Post back in November, according to that report. Most notably, her history with a former managing editor whose transfer to launch Huffington or HuffPost India was later revealed to be a result of HR investigations into whether he had sexual harassment or sexually harassed multiple young women in the New York office. Gizmodo recently revisited these allegations, not only independently confirmed that the investigation was indeed the reason for the managing editor's transfer, but that Huffington knew about his actions before they were reported to HR, according to a former employee with direct knowledge of the investigation. So perhaps Huffington should have done more at the time to stop sexual harassment within their own company rather than forwarding the vague goals of Me Too, only to realize too late that women are harmed by a paranoid environment regarding men. Again, folks, I could have predicted this. I really could have predicted this. And it goes back, I keep telling folks, they complained about Mike Pence saying he would never take a dinner alone with a woman that wasn't his wife, or a meeting alone that wasn't his wife. He's smart. He's practicing something the Boy Scouts are teaching people. A lot of companies have sort of adapted their too deep leadership policy. Whenever I had to counsel a boy, I couldn't counsel him by myself. I always had to have, whether it was out in the open or not, I always had to have another assistant scoutmaster or scoutmaster, if I was an assistant, there with me counseling the boy. That way, everything was established. Every word was established. Every action was established. And these men, the only way this is going to be turned around is if they start practicing the too deep leadership. Whether it's another woman or another man in there with them. Preferably, if you're meeting with a woman, preferably you have another woman in there. And if you're meeting with a man, have another man in there. Preferably. But if not, the opposite's okay. You know, if you have them, as long as there's a third party in there, that you're not alone with the woman that you're trying to mentor or work with or whatever. Period. Just don't do it. And if it doesn't occur, then there's no accusations that can be leveled. And if there are accusations that are leveled, then you have a witness to either corroborate those accusations or not. So, again, we need to be very, very careful when it comes to a lot of this stuff, especially this Me Too movement. This is going to really hurt women advancing in the worst place, because where are they going to get their experience? Where are they going to get the knowledge they need, the wisdom they need, if they're not being mentored by somebody that's been there and done that? Ben Shapiro says we should have saw this coming. And I talked about this a long time ago when, you know, this whole thing with the sexual harassment, when, you know, came out in Weinstein and the whole thing blew up. I talked about this back then. So we really need to be cautious about what we're doing and who we're doing it with. Okay? It's been the Dan Clements Show. I'm your host, Dan Clements, your constitutional lawyer, fighting for your right just to be an American. Remember, if you aim at nothing, you hit it every time. Have a great rest of the day, folks, and God bless. And we'll see you on the next video. And if you're going to attend a church on Sunday, attend a church of God's choice. visit your local Church of Christ and worship God the way He wants to be worshiped. Have a great rest of the day, folks, and we'll see you again.